Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
What makes up someone's character? Is it innate? Can character be taught? Do we even understand what character means? Take those instances when someone issues one of those cliched public apologies. A person does something wrong, is found out, and then says, "I'm sorry," and follows it up with a statement like, "That's not who I am," or claims some behavior was out of character for me. How a person can be someone other than themselves? Is it possible? Aren't our actions and behaviors shaped by our character? Harvard professor of English and Visual and Environmental Studies, Marjorie Garber, tackles these questions and more in a new book called Character: The History of a Cultural Obsession. Garber explores the thread that connects character flaws to character assassination and character tests to characteristics. Her book traces the journey of character's construction from Aristotle to Shakespeare, through the height of phrenology, and even into the Boy Scouts. And throughout the book, she has an eye to the modern day, where you can find hundreds of articles questioning the president's character, while the actual meaning of character can be elusive. Marjorie Garber joins me now. Marjorie, welcome to All of It.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you on this. Join this conversation. Call in and tell us, how do you define character? When was the last time you saw character in action, whether that was good or bad character? And does character still mean to society what it used to? Give us a call at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. We also have a tweet up you can respond to. It's the one with the very funny Good Place GIF. Or if you want to remain anonymous, you can always leave us a message on Instagram, at allofitwnyc. That's the handle for Twitter and for Instagram, or you can just pick up the phone and call us. 646-435-7280. What does character mean to you? When was the last time you saw character in action? And does character still mean the same thing that it used to? So Marjorie, I'm going to start in a way. My producer and I were both laughing because we both immediately went to the dictionary to look at the definition of character, and we want to ask the first question about it, but it really sounds like a 10th grade paper, but I'm going to do it anyway. The definition for character by Merriam-Webster Dictionary is one of the attributes or features that make up and distinguish an individual. So what does that definition leave out about character that you wanted to explore and study?
It leaves out everything, just about. it's a good example of why I wanted to write the book, because the word means everything and nothing. It's something that makes up the individual, but it's also a literary character. Is it moral? Is it ethical? Is character the same thing as good character? Can you change it? Can you grow it? Can you teach it? Can you see it? The word is all over the place. If you look in a different dictionary, you'll find that one of the early meanings of it is handwriting, or a stamp that you use, like almost like an advertising stamp, to incise something. So the idea is that character is carved into you, can't be changed. And I was fascinated by the fact that I see it every day in the newspapers and every day in any novel that I read and lots of other places. On the radio, indeed. And no two people mean the same thing by it. So I wanted to chase both its history and also the fascination of the term.
I want to ask about the fascination. You use the word obsession in the title of the book. Why are people obsessed with character?
Because they think it somehow is both pleasurable and dangerous. It describes what they would like to have said about themselves. It describes what they would like to be able to interpret in others, but is it a performance, or is it something that's put on, like a literary character or a dramatic character? In the 19th and early 20th centuries, there were all kinds of systems for trying to figure out character, give it many different names, break it into parts of the brain that would indicate what was language and what was ethics and what was morality and so forth. And this was very highly reputable stuff for a long time until it became a kind of pop psychology, until it became something practiced in the marketplace rather than in the doctor's or the consultant's office. But it began as a kind of philosophy. It began as a kind of inquiry into the roots of human character. And that goes all the way back to the Greeks, all the way back to Aristotle, and all the way back to Theophrastus, who was a student of Aristotle and who was interested in character types. And that notion of character types is really how we get characters in television, character in novels, character in theater, type or pushing against type. These two are characters.
What did your research say about the difference between character and personality?
This is a wonderful question. Again, people have differed in this regard. At the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, psychologists, and psychology had just become a formal study, decided that character was too moral and too ethical a term, that it should be pushed aside because it was judgmental. And you didn't want to judge people scientifically. You wanted to assess them and see what their characters were like. Again, could their characters improve or change? So that personality became the notion for what we, you and I might call character in action. The persona comes from the word mask, the persona of the person, the way the person presents herself or himself to other people. Whereas character, because of the way it had been used in the previous century, seemed to be tied to ethical or moral judgment. So the idea was to get rid of the notion of judging people and to describe them instead. These days, we use the word personality as a noun to describe a sports personality or a television personality or a YouTube personality, as if personality were a thing now rather than a set of behaviors. So that's part of what is so fascinating to me is how these words change over time, how they're not stable, and they're not, you can't say, well, this is what it once meant, so this is what it means now. Its meaning is a collection of all of its meanings. And personality for a while was the idea of a good personality, a bubbly personality, a firm personality. But there are also in the diagnostic manual of diseases, of mental, mm-hmm. mental states, lots of personality disorders. So that personality here becomes a description of the psyche and of how it works, of our desires and our fears and our hopes.
My guest is Marjorie Garber. The name of her book is Character, The History of a Cultural Obsession. Our phone lines are pretty full, so let's check in with some listeners. Let's go to line one and talk to Viola from Queens. Hi, Viola. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, what is the relationship, if there is any, as I was just listening to the conversation, it seems as though you have a historical perspective on the word character and what it has embodied through history. So maybe I'll ask my question a little bit differently and ask, what is the relationship between virtues and character? In the absence of thinking about virtues in a judging way, as you just mm-hmm. said, but there are traits of that we consider character traits, such as kindness, truthfulness, compassion, and in the great religious traditions, for instance, let's say in Islam or in the Baha'i faith, the divine or God is known as having 95 names. And these are attributes that human mm. beings can aspire to. So how do they relate to character? And I'll take my answer off the air, and thank you.
Thanks, Viola. Professor?
Well, thank you for your question. Character traits are a whole category that belong not only to philosophy and religion, as you're describing it, but also to psychology, and very specifically to Freud. But all the traits and kind of virtue ethics, which is what you're describing here, is a certain kind of philosophy that talks about doing things well, doing things right, being kind to people, having a notion of cultural generosity and so forth. And that term virtue ethics has replaced character here, again, in part because character could also be bad character.
Mm-hmm.
To have character is not necessarily the same as to be, when people say he is a man of character, she or she is a woman of character, that implies just what you are here describing, Ryan, the virtues, the qualities that make for what we think of as goodness. But character traits, character flaws, character assassination, the word has also been used to describe negative traits, negative characteristics, which is a word that's, of course, related to character. So you're quite right to describe one notion of character, and when we praise someone for having character, that's what we are saying or that's what we think we're saying. But if we say, he's a real character, or he has a character flaw, or she has a character flaw, we're pointing toward the same well of qualities or traits and pointing towards some that are negative or absent.
I'm curious about culture's influence on character, and I'll give you an example. Sometimes a wife of a politician will stand by her husband who has been unfaithful, and she will stay with the husband. And there's one group of people will say that shows strong character. She's there for her marriage. She can show forgiveness. There are other people say that is weak character. She should kick him to the curb and keep moving. So my question is, the same act, people can take different things away from different ideas about character. How much of that has to do with culture? How much does that has to do with how we're raised? Is this part of this point you're making, that it's a sort of a living, breathing, evolving thing, character?
That I would certainly say, but if I can go back to your example, because it's a fascinating one, the person's character there being discussed is really the errant males in this case. He has cheated, he has behaved in a way that the example that you gave at the beginning of the hour, this is not who I am, or as people used to say, I am not a perfect man, as if anyone was expecting that would be the case. The spouse's situation here is really, I think, not so much one of character as of politics, calculation, determination, love, a whole bunch of other things that I wouldn't necessarily describe as an act of character in and of itself, because it's dependent upon the relationship to that other person. I think it's the person who's offering or seeming to offer an apology. We hear so many people say these days, if I've offended someone, I apologize, which is not at all the same as saying I apologize. It's pushing away that sense of self-incrimination or recrimination and laying it on the recipient who is made to feel oversensitive or judgmental or something like that. But the in the scenario that you're describing, the individual whose character is really up for assessment is the person who is issuing an apology or has been caught in some difficult situation. And the spouse is there as a prop is probably not a very good word to use here, but as a support rather than as a freestanding figure.
But what about someone like Hillary Clinton? People definitely judged her character on her decision to stay with her husband.
Yes, they did. But that's because they were judging his character. they felt that if he behaved in such a sleazy way, they would not stand up to him, or who is she? She must be calculating something in order to stand up to him in this way. They were judging her because of her relationship to him, and I would say in many cases they had already decided their judgment of him before they decided their judgment of her.
Let's go to Craig on line two. Craig, thanks for calling All of It. What's character to you?
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Actually, the screener actually mentioned what I said really wasn't political, and I really wasn't going to get political, but it seems like your guest is headed in that direction. Especially with what, well, specifically with what you guys just said regarding Hillary and Bill, I think the character issue wasn't one of how Bill acted more than how Hillary, a proclaimed feminist, went on a series of campaigns destroying women.
Well, but you know what,
so
Mark, you know, Craig,
what
you could say the same
say
for
about
Mark.
Character?
But you could say the same. I mean, the other side of that coin is Mark Sanford and his wife. Mark Sanford's a, you know, on the other side of the political aisle. His wife didn't. She did the opposite. So, but let's get back to
not running for president.
Yeah, but let's get back to your point. You said you want to talk about what you thought character was.
Yeah. So, in terms of what I think character is it's more actions as opposed to verbiage. So, if you have somebody who's in a position that no one in this person's no one else was ever in this particular position, whatever that position is, whether it's a female who's now in a position of power or, you know, a person of color, and that person speaks very beautifully, but the actions of that individual actually show that he or she didn't act in the best interest of, let's say, aliens and African-Americans, specifically Barack Obama. And yet, President Trump, who's not eloquent at all in his speech, but has made the lowest unemployment rate for Hispanics, for African-Americans across the board. So whose character is better than the other?
So your point is that character is more than actions.
Yeah,
let the professor respond for a second there, Craig. She wants to jump in. Go for it, Professor. Professor Garber, go for
Craig,
it.
Craig, if you have more to your question, that's fine. Did you want me to talk about this question of President Trump and his actions versus his language? Or because it's his actions, in fact, that people have critiqued, whether it's his clearing out Lafayette Park in order to hold up the Bible, or whether it's the affairs he is claimed to have had, or if and indeed, in terms of, the difference between language and action is not always clear. When you say something very dismissive about someone's homeland, that's an act of speech, but it's also action. And these are things that people use when they try to evaluate Mr. Trump's character. It's not his legislation, which there's a huge passage of time between the enunciation of a desire for some kind of law and its passage. Or if you look at words being used to describe Joe Biden these days, one of the words that surfaces very frequently is decency. And decency, if we go back to the earlier caller in this question of what virtue is, decency is a word that we use very often these days to characterize someone we think has good character or admirable character. When we talk about actions that show character, we could talk about rescuing someone from a burning building or something like that, or heroism in war. Those are also actions that show a certain kind of character. And those are actions that function like speech, so to speak, in that they are doing that has a certain effect. But for politicians, speech is action. I think we really can't dispute that.
My guest is Marjorie Garber. The name of her book is Character, The History of Cultural Obsession. Our number is 646-435-7280. We'd love to know what character means to you. We'll take more of your calls, and we'll speak more with Professor Garber after the break. This is All of It. My guest is Marjorie Garber. The name of her book is Character, The History of a Cultural Obsession. We've been asking you, what is your definition of character? When was the last time you saw character in action? Our number is 646-435-7280. Or you can tweet to us at All of It WNYC, or send us a direct message if you'd like to remain anonymous. That's at All of It WNYC. From Instagram, we have Character is Defining Humanity. It's when your thoughts and ideas dictate your behavior regardless of ethics and morality. Being who you say you are is a testament to your character. Dave said, it is what you do when no one else is looking. I think that's a really interesting one. I'm interested, Professor, did you find that character is something that can be cultivated, or is it innate?
Well, that is the big debate. I make no judgment about that. I'm interested in the fact that there are the Boy Scout movement, for example, is founded on the idea that you can improve character, that you can train people in traits of character, that all the Boy Scout badges and so forth, a scout is faithful, a scout is trustworthy and so forth, that those are all things that can be taught. And the implication here especially was that it could be taught to young boys who maybe didn't come from very educated families, for whom this was their principal ethical training. There are opposed notions that say the character is innate, that's who you are, and you can't change it, though you can develop those traits of your character that are best to your own ability. But whether medically or visually or politically or ethically or in school, this whole question about whether character can be changed, whether when for example, every year a president makes a declaration of National Character Counts Week, and the idea is that in schools across the country we should think about character and developing character. And here the implication is that schools have something to do with building character, with shaping character. And clearly this idea is that character can indeed change. But there are whole schools of thought that think that the word character belongs to something innate and not something that develops.
I was interested in the part of the book where you wrote about the idea of the external, people's appearance, somehow indicating their character to certain people. That, for example, right or wrong, whether somebody might perceive someone who is muscular as being more disciplined, perhaps, or someone who cares about their appearance being vain might be a character flaw. How is it that the external has come to be some sort of symbolic of the internal? Because I think of character as an internal thing.
Well, and again, it's a very good question. There have been much nastier versions of this, which you very politely are not explaining, which are the notions that somehow various types of look represent certain character flaws. I was looking, for example, at Cesare Lombroso's book on Criminal Man, in which he says murderers have a specifically flat top to their heads. We may think that's ludicrous right now, but these were best-selling books. He wrote a book called Criminal Man and a book called Criminal Woman, and this was all part of a larger movement of eugenics at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, trying to develop the idea of good breeding, as if all breeding were not in itself good, and which is, it belongs to that. You're stuck in a certain kind of character and a certain kind of physical presentation of character. Racism is very much connected to this negative assessment of character by perceived observation or assumptions based upon perceived observation. And that's one of the reasons why this book is so timely right now, because judging people by how they look, how they speak, what you think about them when you first encounter them, whether it's grooming or style or self-presentation in another way, assessing that as character has led us in very dangerous paths over the last many years. And it's, again, one of the impetuses that I had for writing this book.
You write in the book, Dr. King's resonant wish is, in his I Have a Dream speech on August 28, 1963, that his children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, remains one of the most succinct and powerful statements about character in public discourse today. Why is it powerful?
It's powerful, it's compelling, partly because King is such a brilliant stylist because of the rhythms of the speech itself, but also because of the outside-inside difference here, the color versus the content, and the idea that character has a content, that character is not sum-upable in one word or one description, whether it's admiring or dismissive, but the character, in fact, is a mixture of factors that work together in order to make us the best that we can be. That was part of the point of this brilliant and resounding utterance, and it is extremely effective, more so when one hears the tape, of course, but it's a very powerful distinction between the outside and the perceived outside and the perceived inside. Though I think that these days we sometimes confuse the outside with the inside and the inside with the outside.
My guest is Marjorie Garber. The name of her book is Character, The History of a Cultural Obsession. We've got some great calls lined up. Let's go to line two. Megan is calling us from Westchester. Hi, Megan. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And this sounds like a fascinating book. I'm dying to read it. But I was thinking when you were talking about actions especially, that often we think of character, we hear metaphors of character as being built or shaped as if it's something fixed. And I kind of think of character very differently than that. It's something that's more fashioned. And I think that it can be really influenced by whatever you're taking in, whatever you're surrounded by. And I think that has a lot to do with why when people say, you know, oh, this person did something very out of character, it's because it's really about choice. Character is really about the choices you make. And that can be in speech or action, you know. And I think that it's reflected in both.
Thank you, Megan, for calling in. What about the idea of choice, Professor? Where, from your research, where did choice come into this?
Well, I think it's a very powerful notion, and it has to do, again, with the idea of developing your character, improving your character, developing character traits or recognizing and improving character traits, just as your example before of a muscled individual has developed physical traits in a certain way. So many people think that one can develop one's character or one's character traits or aspects precisely by coming to a choice. I think that's a very, very persuasive argument. If you have a choice between an ethical and an unethical behavior, or a shortcut versus a more principled way of behaving, how you behave there is a mark of character, to use that notion of incision again, or of stamp. And what seems very clear is that practice, if it doesn't make perfect, makes better. That the more one comes upon these kinds of choices and makes choices that are consistent with the idea that one has of oneself or one's goals, the easier it becomes to keep doing that. Whereas if one behaves in a way that might be judged as a character flaw, and that becomes the shortcut, that also becomes part of what the outside world would say, that's that person's character. That's the kind of thing that person typically will do.
Let's go to line five. Stephen is calling in. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for holding, and thanks for calling All of It.
Thank you for taking my call, Allison. So, can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you great.
Can
you're
you hear
on
me
the
okay?
air, sir.
Yes.
Great. Okay. So, I want to clarify something that the other gentleman had to say about Donald Trump. Just a little administrative. You know, talk about reflecting on character. Look, in 2009, minority unemployment was at a very high rate. And, you know, not for nothing, but Barack Obama chopped 10 percentage points off of that. Donald Trump, you know, chopped one, all right? And when you go in and you take credit for the whole thing, that's like plagiarism. And
so Stephen, I'm hearing you say that your response, it's so interesting because we were talking about developing this segment and we were like, let's try to keep it apolitical. But in this year, it's really rather difficult to do that because people have very strong feelings and strong beliefs about character. And I hear what you're saying and I'm glad you made your point. But I do want to get back to the conversation. When you think about character, Stephen, what do you think about?
So character is for me. You say what you mean and you do what you say.
There you go.
Okay. That makes somebody like me, who says what they mean and does what they say, a dinosaur. Okay.
And
But I don't want those. You know what? Then I don't want those dinosaurs to go extinct if they're dinosaurs. Let's
Dinosaurs are coming back.
Let's go over to line six. Elsa has a really interesting. Excuse me, one second. Elsa, I want to get Elsa in here. She's got a really great question, and it goes directly to something that you've written about, Professor. Elsa, can you weigh in?
Hi. Yes, hi. Gosh, but I think we really need a political discussion, but we will have it at other times. But anyway, I had a question, actually, speaking about Shakespeare. Thank you for taking my call, also, and thank you for a great show. I just overheard you mention the Professor Aristoteles, and I was kind of curious, speaking about Shakespeare, with the public, Shakespeare in the Park, that they do at 8 o'clock. But and I was curious how character came into the world of literature, because I have like the Shakespeare big book in front of me, so I actually went and saw, and he uses like dramatis personae, and in other languages we use persons more than actual character. So I was curious if there is when we can see this shift, and if it's specifically also an American shift, because I looked at American plays a little fast, and I saw, like, then they say characters. Meanwhile, in the Swedish play, for instance, you say person. And also just how, when maybe that shift happened. And also I find that it's interesting with Shakespeare, for instance, that, you know, he doesn't really define people in his play. You know, in one of his plays, you know, they change the clothes of him, and he wake up in a totally new person, quote unquote. You know, he's a totally new character, and he believes he is that. So it's just kind of this freedom of character in another way. And I just wanted to hear, the tracing of the person's character and,
Professor, you write about Shakespeare quite a bit in your book.
I do, and I teach Shakespeare. So let's give you a quick history of this. That when Shakespeare wrote his plays, there are speech prefixes. It says king, or it says Duke, or whatever it is. There's no list of roles. When the plays started being edited after his death, there was something, an editor added something called a list of roles. That got turned into Latin dramatis persona, the people of the drama. The word character shows up all over the place in Shakespeare, but not in that in the sense of a dramatic character, but rather in terms both of handwriting and of personality. But our word character, when applied to persons in Shakespeare's plays, comes as much from our reading of fiction as from our reading of drama, and comes in part from the notion of putting on a performance. It's not original, that is to say, to Shakespeare or to his contemporaries. But the characters of Shakespeare have been written about by Freud, by Darwin. It's a whole subtext in my book of how many of these people who have been investigating human character use Shakespeare as the proof text. For example, Lady Macbeth is like such and such, and that's the proof, that's the answer to the question about what kind of emotions could make a wife behave in a certain kind of way. Blushing is something that Darwin talks about as a way of betraying one's character. You blush because you're embarrassed or you're ashamed or something. And then he talks about who blushes in Shakespeare. And throughout the history of these discussions, Shakespeare comes in as the answer to the question. If you want to know how human behavior works, look at Shakespeare. So that our notion of human character, which we often associate with Shakespeare's description of individuals, gets tied up with the notion of Shakespearean character so much that it's not always clear which one leads the other, whether the Shakespearean character produces the notion of human behavior or the other way around.
The name of the book is Character, The History of a Cultural Obsession. It is by Marjorie Garber. Marjorie, thank you so much for spending so much time with us today and for answering our listeners' questions and engaging with them.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.